south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Hey, how's this for a Latin American gringo business idea? Yeah, start a company called NACPA Constructores S.A., or in English, the NACPA Construction Company. So then what does the NACPA stand for in the company? Are you ready for this? It stands for No Ass Crack Pants Allowed Construction Company. All right, so what's that all about? Well, just a couple days ago, I phoned up a glass company and asked them to send some people over. I wanted to have a sliding patio door, actually three sliding patio doors that were old and leaky and damaged, replaced with new modern doors. And the next day, they sent over four guys. A construction crew, it was a bigger job than you might have imagined, had to unhinge the doors without breaking the glass, take the frame out, and then reinforce the opening, and set a brand new metal frame. The new replacement doors were commercial quality, not regular household quality. So anyway, the four guys show up, a boss and three helpers. The boss was a nice, quiet, dignified older guy. And his three helpers, apparently dunderheaded numbnuts, all of them, sporting ass crack pants riding extremely low. And I mean ass crack pants where all you see is the white underwear popping through. And I'm thinking this crew, you know, they're doing all kinds of jobs. Houses, commercial buildings, schools, hospitals, churches. Yep, especially churches. A lot of glass there. And this is acceptable work apparel? Especially when doing jobs at places like kindergartens and preschools where little boys and little girls are running around. What are they thinking seeing these cheeky guys demonstrating their lower primate brain power? Yep, cheeky guys, pun intended. Is that where fashion is going? The new norm? You know, I was really tempted to say something to the jefe, the boss, who was probably 60, a serious guy. But I remember the old adage, you fight the battles you know you can win. For a second, I thought of saying, what is this, ass crack pants wars? But I didn't. Maybe 10 years ago I would have, but I didn't. Oh, and I remember thinking, if one of these sweaty guys sits on my furniture, I'm going to pop him. Anyway, I got the idea from the boss man, the old guy, that he considered his guys somewhat disposable. Anyway, I'm calling out all you expat guys and gals out there to give me your own ass crack pants stories, okay? However, if you have leaky brain syndrome and don't think it's an issue, or maybe you have your pants at half-mast right now, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, because I want to hear how you cheeky bastards justify it as a fashion statement. But maybe it's just me, my prejudice, because I was born with not much of an ass. And it seems in order to make that work, you need a certain amount of meat to keep it together and maintain the look. So what do you think? The NACPA Construction Company. Would you hire him? Well, in light of the other competition, I would. The other question is, would you allow your own kid to sport that fashion around the house or elsewhere? Or am I missing something here? Is this just a phenomenon amongst low-class, undereducated Latinos? Oh, and by the way, have you seen those photos and YouTubes of those thousands of people in caravans in Mexico on their way to becoming illegals in the U.S.? Have a look and you will see the ass crack pants fashion phenomena in the mix. Oh, and expat Eddie made a good point about this. He says, Johnny, it's a young adult and young adolescent guy thing now, but what happens when it starts catching on with young ladies? I never thought about it. The female equivalent of the ass crack pants phenomena. I don't think the world's ready for that, but then again, who'd have thought a couple of years ago it'd become a thing with guys? And why isn't anyone in the media talking about it? Funny thing, too, I've yet to hear ladies, young or old, chime in on the subject. Are they okay with it? Even in front of grandma, the parish priest, and the rest of the world? How about the mothers, sisters, and girlfriends of these shit-for-brains fools? Sounds like a great grad school thesis topic. Or not. Too sensitive, maybe. Probably get you canceled. Oh, and one final note from expat Eddie. He says he's going to have a sign made up. He's going to post it on his front door right next to the no solicitors sign. It's going to say, no asses or ass cracks beyond this point. There's a meme that should go viral. Enough said about that. Way too much said about that. And now an email from longtime friend of the show, Gringo Star. He says, Johnny, here's something to discuss. How about you talk about the survivability of infrastructure in Latin American countries? That would be after a financial crash in the first world. Would cell phones still work? Electricity still flow? Gasoline still be available, etc., etc.? Well, Mr. Star, I'd be worried a hell of a lot more how things are going to go down up in the first world when that happens, and it will happen. I think, Mr. Starr, even though you've been living in Latin America a while, you seem to forget a huge percentage of gringo expats live in gated, guarded communities, neighborhoods, and or high-rise residential towers that have their own wells, their own water supply, and many of those big complexes have their own diesel generators for power outages. Not to mention if you diverted some of that heavy rainy season rainwater to an underground reservoir or a rooftop cistern or 55-gallon drums. You could be completely self-sufficient with water, too. I think you're also forgetting if you live in a tropics or in the Altiplano, you have zero heating costs. And I think you're also forgetting that if you have a 100-pound tank of propane fuel, or maybe two of them. Yep, I said 100 pounds. They're not rated in gallons, but pounds. You buy those tanks yourself, that'll set you back $100. And to fill them, probably under $100 for the both of them. Do that and you'll have enough gas for cooking, a gas dryer, gas hot water heater. Enough to last a single person a year, or two people, a half a year. Not to mention, in practically every big hardware store, they sell small electric generators that run on both gas, diesel, and propane gas. And of course, to really be prepared, go solar. And if you haven't got the money, you don't have to go big. Even though the definition of big solar down here is about half of what you need for big solar up in the States, because, you know, we're in warm climates, and if you're in the Altiplano, you don't need air conditioning. So then what are you running, really? Your refrigerator? A computer, a TV, your lights at night, and lights, you know, these days are extremely efficient. So I recommend for solar, if you're really on a tight budget, don't go big, just get one of those portable systems that has a couple of suitcase solar panels. All you need is maybe 400 watts of panel and a 1500 to 2000 watt, all-in-one lithium battery solar generator, they're called. And that might send you back $1,500 to $2,000, but you'll never be without enough power to at least run the basics. Lights, computer, TV, and refrigerator. I've got one of those systems myself, and sometimes when I'm going out in the boonies, I'll toss it in the back of my car with those suitcase solar panels, and I'm all set, ready to go where no gringo has gone before. Or maybe just to the beach. Now, you've heard me mention suitcase solar panels. You should have a minimum of 400 watts. More is always better. There are suitcase solar panel sets out there that are 200 watters. So you buy two of them at the minimum. That means you'll get the full 400 watts about 6 hours a day. And here's why 400 watts is bare minimum. Add up your refrigerator, which cycles on and off all the time, probably averaging around 150 watts. And your computer and TV and a few lights, another 150 watts. So if your solar panels are putting out 400 watts, that means for at least 6 hours a day, those panels are putting an extra 100 watts or so, charging up those lithium batteries for the night, as well as powering those mentioned appliances during the day. By the way, I've done some checking on my own solar power system. I've got it connected to an app that shows me the exact usage and charging power of the panels moment to moment. Here's the thing. People talk about not having sun the whole day, and you really don't. There's clouds and sometimes heavy overcast. Even so, you still produce wattage during that time, even though it's not the full amount. In fact, here in Latin America, my own system, at 6 in the morning, is already putting out power. Not much, 100 watts or so, but by 8 in the morning, it's putting out full capacity, till about 4:30 or 5 in the afternoon. And then, finally, at around 6 at night, that's all, folks. So anyway, if you want to know the exact basic portable solar system I recommend, cost you around $2,000. And it is absolutely portable. Take you just 5 minutes to set up or tear down. I mean, really, don't you want to be ready for short-term power outages and infrastructure calamities? Just email theexpatfiles at gmail.com and I'll shoot off some information to you. Oh, and just 2 or 3 years ago when I first bought that portable system, there were very few good solid units out there, but now there are many competitors and prices are dropping. Oh, and Mr. Starr in his email also says, if there is an infrastructure collapse in the first world, will cell phones quit working in Latin America? Well, I say maybe, even probably, for a while anyway, who knows? That's why a couple of years ago, while in Costco, called Price Mart here in Latin America, I bought a 4-pack of adjustable band, rechargeable walkie-talkies. They're only $100 for the 4-pack, and I think the brand was Uniden, a pretty good brand. And man, have they come a long way with walkie-talkies. Even the cheapies are very powerful and sophisticated. They're sitting in a drawer somewhere. I only used them once when I first got them to try them out. I tested them out in the boonies, and I got reception for 6 miles. So I've got those in reserve in case the phone system craps out. For $100, you can't go wrong. It's an insurance policy. Then if the phones go down, then you can hand them off to your 3 closest friends or relatives and stay connected. Though if you're not on good terms with them, So then what about gas and diesel? Well, oddly enough, in most Latin American countries, they have places you can have your car or truck converted over to propane gas. So theoretically, you could have your stove, your oven, your hot water heater, your clothes dryer, your generator, and your car all running on propane. And that's why some gringos and expats and upper middle class and wealthy Latinos too, instead of having a few 100-pound tanks of propane around, they move on up to a 500, even 1,000-pound tank that sits stationary, immobile, in the backyard. You see a lot of those big tanks around. Restaurants have them, and they're usually stashed at the side of a building or in the corner of a parking lot. If you've got one of those, the gas company will come right to you and fill it up. And once it's filled, you're really good to go. Bottom line, being self-sufficient even off the grid here in Latin America is so much easier than doing it in the States. Even for big solar installations, you don't need any government permits. Sure, it takes a little preparation, one step at a time, but I can tell you this. How many of you up in the States right now will really be ready when the lights go off? For whatever reason. Meanwhile, down here in Latin America, everybody's got a big head start. Even the poor locals. For lots of reasons, not the least of which, locals are used to having their water and their power go out. They've learned to adapt, which is why, if you look at the roofs of people's houses, you'll see almost everyone's got a cistern. How many people do you know have their own water reservoir or cistern? Probably none. And now let's take an email from Mr. Martillo. You know what the Spanish word martillo means in English? Hammer. Kind of conjures up a distinct mental image, doesn't it? Anyway, Mr. Martillo says, Johnny, feel free to use this as a testimonial on your show or wherever you see fit. He says, I've recently returned from a boots-on-the-ground recon mission in Guatemala. Not only did I have a great time, I'm moving forward applying for residency thanks to you and your great network of people who are helping me to get everything started. Then he says, for anyone considering setting up a plan B or voting with your feet, know that my own plan is only coming together because of two consulting calls with Johnny. While his knowledge and experience are second to none, access to his network alone is worth a multiple of the consulting costs. His right-hand lady, Rita, made part of this trip much easier than it would have been on my own. The real estate she showed me was eye-opening, and she gave me a very honest lay of the land. Like anywhere, some places are better than others, but much better to know the lay of the land way in advance. Oh, and thanks for the zone layouts and advice. All right, let me butt in for a second. He's talking about zones, in this case, in Guatemala City. I've got a couple of reports about various towns and cities in Guatemala, and for Guatemala City in general, I've mapped the 25 zones or neighborhoods, and I've made some comments and critiques about each zone in order to give people an idea what they're like. Are they safe, dangerous, good places to invest, live, or hang out in, or maybe keep away from completely? That kind of stuff. Things that are important to know in advance. That little report's self-descriptive. It's called Rating the Zones in Guatemala City. So what's it good for? One good example would be if you're checking out an Airbnb in, let's say, Guatemala City. You've got hundreds to choose from. If you select one, for example, based on the price and its proximity to the Pan American Highway, let's say, you better know the zone it's in and what that zone's all about. In fact, just recently, a gringo expat wannabe contacted me and said, Johnny, I'm looking to rent a certain inexpensive Airbnb in Guatemala City, located in Zone 2. And I know Zone 2 as a mixed residential and business, kind of run down. Not so desirable for gringos and expats zone, if you know what I mean. And for that reason, the rents and Airbnbs are very cheap. Zone 2 is okay during the day, but I'd never want to walk around alone at night there. Therefore, I wouldn't recommend an Airbnb or hotel in that area. However, I also know that the Airbnb the guy was talking about is right across the street from a police station. In that case, it is safe to walk around at night, as long as you remain within the local proximity. All right, back to Martillo's email. He says, your right-hand lady, Rita, took me to the pharmacy to load up on ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine as well. She also coordinated my time with a lawyer and handled all my travel needs, including COVID testing, to get back to the States. While there, the lawyer addressed most of my business concerns and went right to work on an action plan. Here's another observation. The images of Guatemala in the minds of most Americans are far from accurate, but I feel better knowing, if needed, I have an attorney for guidance and backup. Then, Johnny, after a very nice dinner with him and Captain Mango, I was introduced to another American expat with shared similar interests. Getting real-life experiences from those that are two steps ahead of you makes a big difference. Also, you might want to know, I have toured two other Latin American countries before Johnny's guidance and network, with considerably less to show for it. I hope his seminars get rescheduled soon. I'm already planning my trip back next month. Gracias por todo, signed, Martillo. Thanks for the kudos, Martillo. Nice to know things are clicking for you and you're working on that network. Meanwhile, I got a lot of email from listeners once they heard that show I did about Those ever-present road cockroaches who purposely break every rule in the book. Who else but Latin American motorcyclists, otherwise known as motos? Like, for example, this email coming from one of our many listeners named Dave. He says, "Hi, Johnny. On your 10/17/21 show, you read a story about a crowd standing around a motorcycle accident doing nothing. The conclusion was that this is due to an apathetic and desensitized Latin culture. Well, maybe so in part, but it did remind me of a psychological phenomena known as the bystander effect, wherein the more people present at the scene of a crime or accident, the less likely any individual is to act alone. So standing around at the scene of a wreck might not be so exclusive to Latino populations. In any case, I can vouch for the crazy driving down there." He says, "In my mid-20s, I rented a car in Puerto Rico and found out after the trip that it was police policy to run their red and blue lights constantly to announce their presence in the neighborhood, presumably to give criminals a few blocks head start to wrap up their activities. The whole time I thought it was me who they were trying to pull over, but it never happened. And earlier this month, we took my mother-in-law to Nayarit. She's a typical slow-moving Wisconsinite in her late 60s. The look on her face was priceless, though, when the cab driver would make the sign of the cross and touch the crucifix hanging from the mirror before merging into a highway. And yes, motorcycles were bobbing and weaving everywhere. Aside from that, great show as always, Johnny. Keep up the good work. Signed, the coolest, handsomest Dave on the block." Well, Dave, I'll take your word on it. That's a mighty big claim, though. But I do sympathize with you on the cop thing. Nearly all gringo expats, including me, we still do get a sort of adrenaline rush every time we look in the rearview mirror and see a cop car with the lights flashing. I'm sure you listeners know the feeling. You know, being down here for so many years, that must have happened to me 100 times. And every time, even now, 30 years later, I can feel that stress level kick in just a little. But still, not once have I ever been pulled over by a cop car with flashing lights. The way you get pulled over here in Latin America is when you pass a roadblock and they wave you over. Funny though, when they're in their cop cars, they do ride around with their lights flashing a lot of the time. Though I don't think it's primarily for the reason you stated, Dave. To warn the thieves and no-goodniks that the cops have arrived, they're in the hood. More often than not, the cops are trying to make you think that they're in pursuit of someone or on a way to the scene of a crime. Though in reality, they just don't want to get stuck in traffic, and they use those lights so they can whip through red lights and bottlenecks and keep going. I've seen ambulances pull that trick too. I guess if I was a cop or an ambulance driver, I'd be bored out of my gourd and probably pull the same move. Oh, and Dave, you mentioned Puerto Rico. Funny thing. According to the Worldwide Global Climate Risk Index of 2021 by a group called German Watch, I wonder what nationality they are. Anyway, they studied the approximately 200 countries around the world and have come up with an index of countries that suffer the most from extreme weather events. And number one in the world is Puerto Rico, which in the last 20 years has suffered 24 extreme weather events. They're talking about abnormal events that have battered the island. Just look at the fact that power has not even been completely restored in many outlying areas due to Hurricane Maria, which leveled the place back in 2017. Imagine that, some areas 4 years without power. So if Puerto Rico is number one on the extreme weather conditions list, can you guess number two? Well, it's Haiti. Number three, Philippines. Number four, Mozambique, followed by the Bahamas and Japan. All right, now let's have another motorcycle story email response. Here's one from Chick. He says, "Hello, Johnny. Just a footnote regarding motorcycles in Latin America. More often than not, where I am out in the boonies, where we live, there are many, many passengers on motorcycles. Babies, dogs, chainsaws, weed eaters, etc., etc. Never a helmet to be seen on these rough mountain roads. But more often than not, they're sporting masks. The brainwashing is impressive. I find myself admiring the propaganda when I see such things. It's amazing." All right, thanks for that, Chick. And speaking of more of this COVIDiot nonsense and news items of interest that rarely make it to the first world media, did you know that Sweden has suspended the use of the Moderna shot indefinitely because of certain secondary heart effects? Here's how Swedish health officials are ruling it. They're saying that there's a complete moratorium on Moderna vaccines to anyone under 31, with Iceland, Finland, and Denmark doing the same, with Norway encouraging men under 30 not to get the Moderna shot, though they haven't mandated it yet. And the truth is, all the millions of vaxxed people out there don't want to hear those kind of stats. People just don't like reading the fine print. Do you really think smokers read that cancer warning on every label? It's a risk and it might happen to someone else, but it won't happen to them, right? Remember, the venerable FDA knew that smoking caused cancer and respiratory problems decades before they ever formally admitted it or made cigarette companies print it on the label. Oh, and did you know that 75% of FDA drug testing, you know, to get that all-important FDA approval, is funded by Big Pharma? I know, it's sickening. But let's not choose to vomit during this show. Save it for CNN. Meanwhile, comes this rather amusing article in the lamestream news. The headline? It comes from MarketWatch, and it says, couple retires in Colombia on $4,000 a month. They're quoted as saying in this article, in California, to live this lifestyle, we'd have to be mega millionaires. So then you might ask, why is this article amusing to me? Well, because if you happen to be living off the Gringo tourist trail in a place like Guatemala, Honduras, Salvador, Paraguay, Bolivia, and a few other Latin countries, you know already the average expat couple could live the good life on half of that, $2,000 a month, maybe $2,500, provided you're not addicted to bars or restaurants. So again, there's more confirmation of what I've been saying all along, that if you live in Colombia, it's going to be twice as expensive than living off the Gringo tourist trail in most other Latin countries. Then again, even $4,000 a month is considered lower middle class in the States, right? That's $48,000 a year for a husband and wife or couple. And down here in Latin America, especially off the Gringo tourist trail, 48 G's a year is considered upper middle class, even wealthy. The fact is, the average Latin American lawyer, dentist, or MD, they make on average only $10,000 to $25,000 a year. So keep that in mind when you're comparing first world to third world earnings. Enough said about that too. Before I forget, I want to remind you once again, all of you who've gone to one of those stem cell clinics I've been talking about for the last couple of years, I'd like to hear your story and how it's turning out for you. Already some people have reported in. I'm just doing some boots on the ground data compiling here. Oh, and not to worry. I'll never use your name or give it out. Or if you like, send me an email anonymously, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. All right, let's talk a little bit about the famed Mayan Riviera, the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico. Now, you've heard me say before that for gringos and expats anyway, it used to be one of the safest areas, being that it's the most developed and touristy part of Mexico. Because of that, the Mexican government made it a point to keep it well-policed. But as you know, as the gringo partiers piled in, Cancun's been gringoized and become very pricey. Then, when Cancun was ruined, they rolled south to Playa del Carmen, which people around the millennium used to say was like Cancun 25 years earlier. And now that Playa del Carmen has been overrun by gringos and partiers, the tourists are rolling south to Tulum. And there in Tulum in the year 2010, people were saying, it's like the Playa del Carmen of 25 years earlier. And the beat goes on. The fact is, the Mayan Riviera is getting contaminated by tourists, and the real estate is New York expensive now, even in Tulum, the last holdout reflecting back from the early days of tourism. I've been to Tulum 4 or 5 times. First time I visited, 1997. The big draw back then were those spectacular ruins. But now, as Cancun and Playa del Carmen, it's kind of developed into a tourist ripoff dump. But it wasn't like that around 2005 when I next visited the place. Everything was kind of loose and informal. Lots of older ex-hippie-type gringos hanging around, talking about ayahuasca and tribal medicine. But locals were starting to hit up gringos for money on the street. And when I went back in 2015, everything had changed and I couldn't wait to get out of that place. Good weather, nice beaches, yes, but the locals are hunting for gringos. We've got dollar sign targets on our foreheads. You can't walk a block without locals trying to hit you up. And the services and prices? They're Cancun and Playa del Carmen expensive now, over the top. As one beach-loving gringo expat friend of mine told me, he said he'd been to Tulum a dozen times since 2003, and he saw it evolve from a sleepy little backpacker town to one of the most chill, coolest vacation towns ever. That was around 2008. And now, a dozen years later, it's going through some terrible growing pains. Exactly a mirror image of what's happened to Cancun and Playa del Carmen. It's become the destination for the U.S. college-aged party-hardy crowd. And now, suddenly, tons of sloppy, speculative developments have sprung up, with countless stories of rip-off real estate deals, and of course, that brings drugs, crime, and preying on gringos. He said to me, Johnny, it kind of makes me sad, but I knew that it would eventually happen. After all, when Acapulco got shady and tacky, Cancun was its replacement. And here's something people don't know. Lots of Mexicans who have money don't even travel to that part of Mexico for vacation, because they know it's so much cheaper and more convenient to book a package deal and go all the way to Cuba. The only kicker there, you got to buy an all-inclusive package, because if you don't, a la carte food and hotel prices in Cuba are New York expensive. Yet package charter flights for 3 or 4 nights flying out of Mexico start at $400 a person. No U.S. flights allowed, of course. In fact, one gringo wrote me and said he married a Mexican and he went to Cuba on a package deal for his honeymoon. It was so expensive just to eat at a restaurant, they decided to go to a big local market and stock up on food, etc., to bring back to their room. They made the mistake of not buying an all-inclusive package deal. He says they went to the area in the market where butchers were chopping and they were hanging meat. He saw what he thought were different kinds of peppered beef. But on closer inspection, he said it was just raw beef, loaded with flies. Then he says, Johnny, you mentioned the town of Copan on the border of Guatemala and Honduras. There's a nice new highway to it now and has the most spectacular Mayan city ruins about half a mile from Copan town center. I saw almost no one, and I've never seen anything like it. Almost zero tourists in a place that is absolutely spectacular. You can have Chichen Itza, he says, and those busy Mexican pyramid sites. I'm so happy I stumbled on Copan and had the opportunity to see those magnificent Mayan ruins before the rest of the world catches on. Thanks again, Johnny, for the heads up on that little gem of a place. Signed, Bert. Well, Bert, I'm definitely with you on that. In fact, if I had nothing better to do than to write the great un-American novel, I think I'd buy a little coffee shop in Copan and retire there. Oh, by the way, this just in. A California woman was one of two foreign tourists killed in the crossfire in a drug and gang-related shootout. Guess where? In Mexico's resort town of Tulum. Three other tourists, two German men and a Dutch woman, were wounded as well late Wednesday at a street-side eatery that has outdoor tables, right off Tulum's main tourist strip. The gang of shooters then posted hand-lettered signs appearing at the local market and other businesses, announcing in Spanish, "This was a warning. So you know we mean business." Warning other businesses to either get in line and pay them extortion and protection money, or they're going to continue shooting up tourist spots. The article goes on to say, it's the same gang that extorts protection money from bars and nightclubs in both Cancun and Playa del Carmen. So much for low-key, carefree, sun and fun Mexican Riviera beach life, huh? And for me, that's reason 4,226, 7, and 8. Why? Well, you know the rest.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.